Just one practicality we need to consider. We're considerably late for reasons well beyond our control. We have quite an amount of material to cover this afternoon. Would anyone be inconvenienced if we continue until 6:15, 6:30? Would that be a disturbance for anyone? Oh, sorry, I'm 7:15, 7:30. Thank you for the correction. Would anyone be disturbed by that? Okay, fine, then we can proceed peacefully. Thank you very, very much for joining us. Last time we met, in conclusion of the session, we decided that this evening we would very much like to discuss the science and the art of becoming a conscious cooperator with the Holy Name. So this will be our topic for this evening. We also discussed in brief the role and the responsibility of the counselor. And we understand that this is under the shelter of Vatsalya Ras. It's under this shelter, all of the attributes are those of the parent. So it's very natural for a parent to be very protective of those in their care, to be very vigilant about good influence, bad influences, this kind of thing. So we have a role to play in this regard as well. So I was thinking that it would be quite a natural thing for us to start this session with a question: what do Prabhupada and Krishna think about this idea? We have seen in the course of ISKCON's history that both individuals and the society have suffered greatly by our lack of vigilance. We've seen things help them to be Krishna conscious, realize that actually it wasn't such a good idea. So it always pays to check. What do Krishna think? What does Krishna think? What does Prabhupada think? So we'll do that first, and then we'll have a clear field to explore if they're happy for us to do so. Thank you very much, Prabhu. Would you like to give the mic to Muratoki Mataji? Mm-hmm. Give the mic to Murat. Thank you very much. Thanks, Eddie. So let's chant the sloka, if you can repeat after me. Matchita Sabadogani Maprasada Tarisyasi Tachetvam Mahankaram Nasrosyasi Vinamshasi Machchita Sabadogani Matprasada Tarisyasi Tachetvam Mahankaram Nasrosyasi vinamshasi Machchita savadoghani Maprasadattarishyasi Athachyattvam mahankaran Nasrosyasi vinamshasi. Narataki, would you like to read the translation of purport?
Translation. If you become conscious of me, you will pass over all the obstacles of conditioned life by my grace. If, however, you do not work in such consciousness but act through false ego, not hearing me, you will be lost. Purport. A person in full Krishna consciousness is not unduly anxious about executing the duties of his existence. The foolish cannot understand this great freedom from all anxiety. For one who acts in Krishna consciousness, Lord Krishna becomes the most intimate friend. He always looks after his friend's comfort, and he gives himself to his friend who is so devotedly engaged working 24 hours a day to please the Lord. Therefore, no one should be carried away by the false ego of the bodily concept of life. One should not falsely think himself independent of the laws of material nature or free to act. He is already under strict material laws. But as soon as he acts in Krishna consciousness, he is liberated, free from the material perplexities. One should note very carefully that one who is not active in Krishna consciousness is losing himself in the material whirlpool, in the ocean of birth and death. No conditioned soul actually knows what is to be done and what is not to be done. But a person who acts in Krishna consciousness is free to act because everything is prompted by Krishna from within and confirmed by the spiritual master.
So what do you think? Would Krishna like us to be a conscious cooperator? Yes? No?
Yes.
Would Prabhupada like us to be a conscious cooperator? I think from what we're reading, they insist that we become one. If we want our lives to be successful, it's a very good idea to take up this challenge. So we can proceed very smoothly now. We know what Prabhupada wants, we know what Krishna wants. So first we'll have a look at this topic from the scientific perspective. Technically speaking, what do we mean by these words, conscious cooperator? Why is it a good reason to become a conscious cooperator? What are the challenges that we may face in our attempts to become such a person? And how do we deal with these? So in this way, we'll be exploring the scientific field. As we mentioned briefly last week, we are presently at milestone 2 on the journey back home. This consists of three things which are interactive: Sadhusanga, Bhajanakriya, and Anathanavritti. Bhajanakriya, we have taken shelter of a bona fide spiritual master, initiation from him. We're connected to a bona fide sampradaya. We're undergoing our practice of the holy name under discipline, instruction of the guru. And we're doing that in sadhusanga. We're getting the nourishment of sadhusanga. And the anathanavritti means that we're aware that there are difficulties in the heart that are blocking our progress. We may not have taste, maybe for many reasons. But we're aware of it and we're trying to overcome these limitations. Our next step on the path is to nistha. Nistha means that the heart is almost clear of anattas. It's a platform of steadiness in bhajan, steadiness of mind and practice of devotional service. There's only one problem. This step is a very big one, and none of us are vamanas. It's a very, very big ocean. It's full of sharks, alligators, tamingala, all sorts of things. And on top of that, we have our own weaknesses. We may not be good swimmers. So, Kapila Dev, in his Teshita Devihuti, he explains that there are actually 81 ways that we can try and cross this ocean. I'm not going to go into these kind of details today, but we'll look at three prototypes, three standard ways that we could look at it. We have the devotee who is chanting, who has taken initiation, but is very mechanical in her chanting, not so conscious of the importance of good association, and generally speaking, doesn't have any real idea that there's a need for an endeavor to improve that takes some plan. So what is the fate of such a devotee? I'll be very honest with you. There are three possibilities. That person will drown in the ocean of material existence. Second thing that may happen is that they'll find false shores. They'll deviate, find some other shelter. And the third thing that may be there, they will maintain the externals of a devotee. But their heart will be very barren. It's an empty shell. There's no loving relationship developing with the Holy Name. Second way that we'll look at, person who is very, very determined, but dependent on their own endeavor. I will do. I know the value of Nijala Ekadasi. I know the value of extra rounds. I know the value of endeavoring not to offend the Vaishnavas. So I will make this step. Very strong sense of doership and controllership. Now, in effect, very practically speaking, this is like trying to hold a closed fist. How long can we do that? How long do we want to do that? Sooner or later, we have to relax. So what is the destination of such a person? He may also drown. He may also find false shores. He may also be empty-hearted, but look externally like a very nice Vaishnava. But there's one other possibility for this person. He may, because of his good sanskars, because of many reasons, he may actually climb the ladder, he may cross the ocean, Nistha Ruchi Ashakti Bhava. He may get to the platform of Bhava. But there's one problem. There is one party that you cannot gate crash. Which party is that? It's Radha Gopinath's party. It's strictly by invitation. So by our own endeavors, we can come to the platform of Bhava. But we may stay at that level for many, many births because we haven't actually maintained the proper attitude in our ascending the scale. It may take a long, long time, many, many births, before we move from that position. A third way that we can do it is to decide, because actually the verse from Shikshastika that governs the second stage that we're at now is Shikshastika 2. So here we learn the Holy Name is all accommodating. He's wanting to give us all mercy. But unfortunately, we, because of our offenses, are not interested in taking that mercy. This word durdevam is a very interesting word. Prabhupada translates it as misfortune. But it is made up of two Bengali words, devam, all that is auspicious, and dur, far away. And the reason is our offenses. So this person, he's practicing the same as the others, he's doing in the same way, these three factors are there, but he's thinking, I have to improve. I can't do it by my own endeavor. I need to take shelter. And he thinks, what would Mahaprabhu advise me now? He'll speak to his Guru Maharaj, speak to the advanced devotees. He'll find, Shikshastika 3. I have to develop the qualities of Shikshastika 3. Then I'll be easily able to make this transition. So these qualities imply that we are going to cooperate. If we have a servant in the house who is self-opinionated, we have guests for dinner, they don't leave until 12, we expect that they'll wash the dishes after they leave. They don't want to do that. They have no tolerance in this regard. They argue with you. Maybe they want more money for this. We've all had this experience. They're very considerate to you and your needs because you're paying them at the end of the month. But when your friends come, they're not so concerned. They're not really interested in whether they're properly seated, they receive a glass of water or sherbet or something. And they're very much interested in their own needs. How long would such a servant last? Would we keep him? He wouldn't last long. So we can understand that this third person is really thinking, if I want to cross this ocean, Mahaprabhu's way, I have to become a conscious cooperator. I have to understand my position, his position, and how he wants me to serve at this point. Is that okay? Everything is clear to now? So then we can see with these three people that we've looked at, the first one is not conscious. So there is no question of him becoming a cooperator. Someone who's unconscious, you can't expect any help from, isn't it? The second person is very conscious, but because of his nature, he's not going to cooperate. But the third person is understanding my success depends upon my ability to cooperate. So this is just to give you some idea. Now, what makes it a good idea? Why would we do this? Why would we decide to cooperate? There are very many good reasons if we look at things objectively. First one is that we are so self-envious that we have reduced ourselves from 1/10 from a full-fledged spiritual personality engaged in loving service to Radha Gopinath. We've reduced ourselves to 1/10,000th of the tip of a hair. Isn't that inconceivable that we've done that to ourselves? Not only are we insignificant and very, very, very tiny, but we have very little power of our own to call our own. And we're in ignorance. So what can we do by ourselves? The other thing is that if we look at the beach, we have a little beach here in a cove. A couple of times I've gone there for chanting. So we see that there is the shore, there is the actual beach, there is the water, and that's where the two meet. Where is the most disturbed area? Where do we see the most movement? On the shore, in the water, or where the two meet? Where the two meet. And this is where we are. This is called the Tathastha Shakti, the marginal energy of the Lord. So because of our very nature, we have to take shelter. Nobody wants to be constantly disturbed. We don't notice it so much at the beach here, but if you go to Puri, you see very big disturbance. Many people have serious accidents in these waters, in that area of Tathastha. So in this circumstance, we have to take either shelter of the material energy, the beach, or we have to take shelter of the internal energy, the spiritual energy, the ocean. So this is another very good reason that we have to, it would be a good choice to become a conscious cooperator, because our position is this cluster. Another very good reason is that we are presently relying on all material resources. Everything that we are using is matter. Some of it may be subtle, our intelligence, our mind. We rely on our body to do so many things. We rely on our wealth to do so many things, our authority, so many things we rely on. All of them are material. Our goal is spiritual. Matter cannot enter spirit. So none of these things can help us. This is another very good reason. We could go on with a long list, but we would take a long time, and we don't have a long time. So we have very good reason to become a conscious cooperator. Now, I would like to do a little exercise at this time, very simple thing, won't take very long. We'll hand around this bag. Inside the bag, you'll find some pieces of cellophane with a little clip on them. So please take one each. Thank you very much. This one? Thanks. Yeah, that's a good idea. So I want you to take the papers out of the clip. Thank you very much. And to hold them in one hand. I'm going to say a number of words. If any of those words suit you, I want you to transfer one of those pieces of paper to the other hand. Very simple exercise. Have we all understand what we're going to do? Okay? Elephant. Yes, okay, no problem. I want you to hold the pieces of paper in one hand. I'm going to say a series of words. If any of those words suit you, then take one of those pieces of paper and put it in your other hand. Every time a word suits you, move a piece of paper across. Okay? Yes. Okay. Excuse me? Not clear what I'm expecting you to do? Okay, fine. No problem. So what we're going to do is hold the four pieces of paper in one hand. Then I'll begin to say a number of words. If you can relate to any of those words, each word that you can relate to, you put a piece of paper in the other hand. For example, I may say Indian. So you may take a piece of paper out of this hand and put it into the other hand. Is that okay? We're clear on that? Fine. Young. Educated. Business-minded. A man. A woman. Lazy. Intelligent. Okay, I think that's enough. Now, I want you to put the papers that you have chosen to take to the other hand. They're the main things you want to use now. So put the others in a book or put them somewhere out of the way so there's no confusion. Now what I want you to do is to take those pieces of paper, put them all together and look through them. And Mother Narutoki, I really don't know many of the devotees' names. So I'd like you to call on some devotees to tell you what color they see through their paper. Just call on a few people to tell you what color they're seeing through their paper. Yeah, what color they're seeing when they look through. Are you understanding the point? So you just call on different devotees to tell you what color they're seeing when they look through their paper.
Leela? What do you see? Black.
Can you see through the paper? Okay, so we can see through it. You're seeing black, is it? Okay. Someone else? Okay, fine. Next one?
Kishori.
Brownish, okay.
Krishna Chandrapur. Green. Nitya Krishna Prabhu.
Is which color? Chocolate. Okay.
Banka Bihari Prabhu.
Green. Green. Okay.
Madhav Priya.
Can't see through. That's, okay, fine.
It's too dark. Amritanam. What is it? Green. Radhani. Radhani with me. Brown.
Okay, fine. So we can understand that there are many different colors that we're seeing through. And what we're talking about here is the layers that we put on the heart. We have different identities that are temporary identities, and they actually disturb our chanting. They disturb our idea of what is our real goal of life. So many things. Let's see why they do this. What we're doing now, last week we had quite a detailed look at the challenges of becoming a conscious cooperator. But I want to introduce you today to some of Maya's more subtle tricks. Quite a deadly bag of tricks. So the first one is misidentification. Let's see what happens when we do this. Our sense of identity very much shapes our desiring. Our desiring very much shapes our discriminating and our setting of priorities. This influences our thinking and planning. We then start to have some emotion about what we're planning to do. Some strength is coming there in the form of willing. Finally, we do it. And the whole thing taken together will give us our destination. So this question of how we identify is very important for us as individuals trying to advance on the path, because every false identity that we take on is like putting a color across the heart. The heart cannot see through such colors. It becomes very difficult. So we're making difficulties for ourselves unnecessarily. The other thing is that it's a source of great disturbance in a community of devotees. I see different colors than you do because I'm identifying differently than you are. All those mud worries, I don't understand the way they do things. I'm Punjabi. We do things differently. All those Matajis are always talking about this and that, isn't it? But actually, these false designations that we take on, they're like froth on the Ganges. They've got nothing to do with the reality. So if we take on an identity that is a spiritual identity, that doesn't is never a source of crisis for us, then we can proceed very peacefully, very without aparad in our spiritual life. There was a stock exchange scam a few years back in Bengal. And one of the people who suffered most was a young Bengali. He lost crores in that scam. He was very newly married, 2 weeks he'd been married. When he heard news of the crash, he was so distraught that he committed suicide. Now, what is the root cause of him being distraught? He's identifying as a businessman. And of course, Maya is adding a few more things there: successful businessman, influential businessman. And overnight, the whole identity crashed, and so did he. So we can understand that it's a very good idea to take on an identity that not only helps us in our spiritual life, but will also help us in our material dealings. So I'd like to give you such an identity. It's one of my favorite slokas from Chaitanya Charitamrita, and I'd like very much for us to learn this. Thanks very much. Thank you. This is from Chaitanya Charitamrita. As I've just mentioned, it's spoken by Advaita Acharya. Now, the fact that it's spoken by him is a good indication that it's something worth taking shelter of. Advaita Acharya is Mahavishnu. Mahavishnu is the one that gives us our whole playground for us to pretend that we're something we're not. He provides the whole playground. He's also known as Sadashiv. So Sadashiv, who is his worshipable Lord? His worshipable Lord is Sankarshan. And who is Sankarshan? Sakshan is presiding deity of false ego. So this person who has provided all facility for us to forget who we are, he comes as Advaita Acharya and he says, wake up, I have your real identity in my pocket, I'm prepared to give it to you, are you interested? The other thing that's very interesting about Advaita Acharya, he is what we call the Pancharatrik Vidya Shraya. That means that he is our shelter for our practice of Vaidhi Bhakti. Our sadhana bhakti is under his shelter. So this person is giving us this identity. Now you may say, but I live in Radha Gopinath's shelter. I see myself as a servant of Radha Gopinath. That's very nice. But if we have a little vision through the Shastra, we understand that Radha Gopinath and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu are non-different. They're the same person. But they have different moods, and they can offer us different things. For example, I want to buy a fridge. It's hot. I want to buy a fridge. I know someone who distributes fridges, but I also know his personal address. So I go to his home, and I say, I want a fridge. He says, you come to the wrong place. My shop opens at 10 o'clock. Please come to my shop at 10 o'clock. So what are we looking at here? We're looking at where he enjoys his fridges at home. Where he sells his fridges is at the shop. So what are we dealing with Radha Gopinath and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? Mahaprabhu distributes fridges and Radha Gopinath enjoys them. So we have to be aware, what is my need? I need the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Narottam Das Thakur explains that if we dive deep into the mercy of the lotus feet of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we'll come up in Vrindavan as a servant of Radhasham. So it's important to understand these fine things. So let's try this mantra. It's a very beautiful mantra. If you could kindly repeat after me. Chaitanya Radhas Samuni, Chaitanya Radhas. Chaitanya Radhas Samuni, Tanra Radhas. Chaitanya Radhas Samuni, Tanra Radhas. Chaitanya Radhas Samuni, Chaitanya Radhas. Chaitanya Radhas Samuni, Tanra Radhas. Chaitanya Radhas Chaitanya Radhas Samuni, Chaitanya Radhas. Chaitanya Radhas Samuni, Tanra Radhas. Chaitanya Radhas Samuni, Tanra Radhas. I am a servant of Lord Chaitanya, a servant of Lord Chaitanya. I am a servant of Lord Chaitanya and a servant of his servants. Now in the Vedic culture, when something is repeated three times, we can understand that you really have to understand this. Harinam, 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 Iva Kevalam. Same mood. You have to understand. This is the process for this age. In the same way, this is the identity for this age. So I'd like to do a little exercise here to reinforce this. And what we're going to do is have a 5-minute kirtan. We won't do it for very long. A 5-minute kirtan. And we're going to have a system where a friend will come towards us. And when they land in our lap, we, with full heart, chant this mantra. If our response to any challenge in life, whether it be an opportunity or a difficulty, is Chaitanya Radhas Samuni Chaitanya Radhas, then we'll have a lot clearer vision of how to deal with that circumstance. We won't become entangled in it. Prabhu, would you like to lead a kirtan again? Just for 5 minutes, short kirtan. Mike, where is if we could hand that back, thanks, Mataji. Yes, please. Full heart. Yes. That would be very nice. The ladies may have a little difficulty, but we just do according to our ability.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Hare
Krishna Hare
Krishna
Krishna
Hare Rama Hare
such a blissful thing to be his servant. I offer my respectful obeisances to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, by whose mercy even a lame man can cross over a mountain and a dumb man can recite Vedic literature. So we've talked about our limitations. We can't make the journey alone, but by Mahaprabhu's mercy, lame men can cross a mountain. Things that are very difficult to do become easy to execute if one somehow or other simply remembers Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But if one does not remember him, even easy things become very difficult. To this Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, I offer my respectful obeisances. And this is one of my favorites. Let me offer my respectful obeisances to Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is always pleased to accept anything given with faith and love by his devotees, and is always prepared to bestow mercy upon them. Always, not sometimes. Always. Where can we find a better master? So blissful to be a servant of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So let's have a look at some of Maya Devi's other tricks. It's good to be aware of them. I know how to deal with them, because when they come, we don't have any difficulty. Yes? This is what this, the idea of this is, that when we identify as being man, we identify as being rich, educated, these things, we're taking on false designations, and these false designations are putting color, coverings on our heart. So even though every day we are trying to consciously chant the holy name very attentively, these coverings are there. So it makes life a little difficult. The other thing is that they breed these difficulties we're going to discuss now. They breed certain mentalities and things. That means that every day, if you have a weed in the garden, you have two ways of dealing with that. Every now and again, you can cut off the surface leaves. You have to be vigilant. This week I have to do this. Or you can pull the thing out by the root. Which is the most intelligent thing to do? Pull it out by the root. So last week we looked at pramada, different kinds of inattention that are there. It was important to do that. But now we're going to look at the root of pramada. These things are important to understand. Maya Devi's bag of deadly tricks. Please don't think badly of her. She's just doing her job. Very important not to have a bad attitude towards demigods. They have their functions to perform. Hers is a thankless one. Doesn't mean we allow her to walk all over us, but at the same time we don't disrespect her. Yes. Yes. It's a very good thing to make a part of, integral part of your life. It's one of the mantras that I chant when I first wake in the morning. I identify myself as soon as I wake up. I'm servant of Prabhupada, I'm servant of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his servants. A number of mantras I say, but this is one that I use a lot. And even if I'm in some difficult circumstance, I'm not sure what to do, I take shelter of this. Like that. Because if we don't take shelter of a transcendental shelter, what we're going to do is take shelter of a material one. I'm a rich man. By my influence, I'll get things done. Does it always work? It doesn't always work. But if we identify as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's servant, even if it doesn't work, we know there's a higher purpose. We know there's a reason why it didn't work. It's part of Mahaprabhu's plan. So basically, it's only a little thing. This is a whole science we could spend weeks on. We have one evening. So I'm just giving you a little taste of different things. And if we have questions, we can discuss afterwards also. Okay. So we can understand that this inattention has very deep roots. The first one we have discussed, the danger of misidentification. The next one, no ultimate goal. This is something that really entangles us. Especially as mothers, we find this very, very prevalent. We become so engrossed in all the immediate things that have to be done. It's not an easy job to be a mother. So we become so engrossed in the present that sometimes we forget what our actual goal is. Isn't it? We may spend 2 years chanting the holy name because we want a good husband for our daughter. Is this why we want to take association, develop friendship with the holy name? We have to be aware. Okay, these other goals are important. It's important that the daughter gets married. It's important that the husband is well fed. So many things are important. We have these short-term goals. But if we only have short-term goals, what's going to happen? Very, very, very debilitating. So what I'd like to share with you now is a beautiful mantra by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself. It's very, very beautiful. And this we can use as a constant reminder. This is another one of my favorites that I chant often, just because I like it. So let's share it. A lot of paper today. I'm getting a lot of people exercising. Thank you very much. So I'm not saying that these other things are not important, that our identity as a husband, our identity as a wife, our identity as a businessman, these are not important. In the day-to-day world, we have to deal with people. We do that through these kind of identities. But we have to maintain, first and foremost, our spiritual identity. The same with our goals. Any intelligent person plans their day, plans their life. That means they'll have goals. But we always have to remember, as spiritualists, the main identity, the main goal has to be a spiritual one. Don't forget, we're talking about how to become a conscious cooperator. These are the elements that we need. Let's try it together. Brahmadana Vinavyata Daritra Jivan Vastakari Vetanamari Deha Pramadan Pramadana Vinavyata Daritra Jivan Dasakari Vetanamari Deha Pramadan Pramadana Vinavyata Daritra Jivan Dasakari Vetanamari Deha Pramadan. Without love of God, Head, my life is useless. Therefore, I pray that you accept me as your servant and give me the salary of ecstatic love of God. Isn't that beautiful? Just a thought. Let's move on. Actually, you can pray this prayer to many people. You can pray this prayer to the Holy Name. You can pray this prayer to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. You can pray it to your Guru Maharaj. It's a very beautiful prayer. He's praying to his Krishna. Yes. Let's look on. We'll go on to have a look at another of Maya Devi's deadly tricks. This one is really, she is so clever. I can't help but admire how clever she is. And sometimes I pray for her. When I need to be clever in something, I pray to her. She's so expert. So expert. So this material adjustment disease. Now, Prabhupada, in a letter to Brahmananda in the early 70s, he said, you should act as if everything depends on you. And you should pray as if everything depends on Krishna. So we can learn a lot from this. The words of Mahabhagavat never are shallow. There is incredible depth to them. So we can understand in our daily life, Prabhupada would like us to be very, very dynamic. We're working for the best firm. We have the best product. So our presentation of it should be the best. Prabhupada would often say this. We should do things better than the materialists. We're Krishna's devotees. So that's how we do with our active service, whether that service be business, whether that service be a mother, whatever it may be, doctor, dentist, so many services are there for us as devotees. But he says, pray as if everything depends on Krishna. So what is our most important prayer? Our most important prayer is the chanting of the holy name. Now, when we do this, we tend to constantly make adjustments to try and chant attentively. We do this in our active service. It's hot, we put on the AC. We have to go from A to B, we get in a car. I can't speak very loudly, you give me a mic. It's intelligent to make these adjustments. We don't want to artificially renounce. That is not our way of dealing with things. I'm sorry? Yes. So it's not inappropriate to make these material adjustments. If it's done in the mood of Isavasya principle, which is I understand everything belongs to Krishna and should be used in his service, then it's to our glory. It's not going to entangle us. It's going to bring us closer to Krishna. Yukta Vairagya. It's a very dominant principle in the line of Rupa Goswami and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. So in our active service, we want to be making these adjustments so that we can bring things to such a standard that we attract the whole world, all the universes, in fact. But when we're chanting our japa, if we make these same adjustments, what are we doing? What we're saying is, I'm depending on my own resources. I'm not depending on Krishna. It's a very, very interesting exercise, which we'll do a little later when we get to the art of chanting as a conscious cooperator. And it's very, very humbling. It makes us aware of our actual reality. And that's good, because we cannot advance from an artificial platform. So it means, for example, I'm chanting, I'm falling asleep. How do we respond to that? What do we do then? We get up and walk. Now, what are we actually saying? I am going to adjust things so that I can chant better. Now, the problem with this is that we have two natures. Because we're marginal energy, we talked about where the shore meets the ocean. We're in the middle there, where the two meet. We have two natures at this point in time. We have the conditional, and we have the constitutional or the spiritual. Now, this conditional nature and identity is very, 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 very strong. But the spiritual is very, very weak. So when we sit down to pray, the mood is one of dependence on the Lord. That means we're taking shelter of those who are already situated in the ocean. We take shelter of our Gurudev. We take shelter of Prabhupada, Rupa Goswami, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, all these great souls. Because what's going to happen if we chant and we're constantly making our own adjustments to be attentive? In fact, what we're doing is digging our own grave. We're relying on the material energy for attention in chanting. We're not relying on Krishna. How long are we going to be able to do that? Is it going to come to a point in our life, maybe at 80 we can't walk? How are we going to improve our chanting then? How are we going to control the material energy, adjust the material energy, if we can't even see it? So what we have to do at this stage of our lives is we have to be exercising this weak arm, this spiritual arm. We have two arms, isn't it? Perhaps we've had a stroke. This arm has become very, very weak. The tendency, because, every time I pick something up, I drop it if I use this arm. So I'm going to use this one. I'll do everything with this arm. But the therapist will say, don't do that. You have to take the trouble. You have to take the trouble to exercise this arm. If you don't, there will be atrophy. The whole muscle will be spoiled. You'll lose it. You won't be able to use it at all. So in our active service, very dynamic. Acting as if everything depends on us. We give it everything we have. But in our spiritual practice of sitting and chanting the name, we'll do this a little later as an exercise, we learn to depend on those who are dependable. This body is not dependable. Our resources are not going to help us at death. I've had personal experience of this. So we want to be developing this strength. Okay? So this is what we're talking about here. Any questions on this? This is a very important point. It's clear? Okay, let's move on. Mismanagement of the meaning of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. This is another one of her tricks. We're having a bit of a struggle. And we remember that Mataji said, if I'm having difficulty, I'm not able to hear the holy name, then perhaps it's a good idea that I'm also thinking of the meaning of the mantra. So the meaning of the mantra is, Arada, please engage me in the service of your Krishna. So I start meditating on this. And before I know it, I'm thinking of my service. It may be any field of service. I think, wow, it really works. Mataji really knows what she's talking about. And I spend my whole japa time planning my day's service, where I need to go, what I need to do. Meanwhile, the holy name is in remote control. Do you get the point? So I'm not understanding that when I'm saying, please engage me in your service, and it's time to chant my rounds, the service is to hear the holy name. Now, it's an interesting thing that we have to remember about this holy name. Tricky fellow. His name is Krishna. He's a person. persons speak. So if you're hearing and you're in good consciousness, your mood is right, Krishna may speak in the form of the holy name. Inspiration may come for your service. Look, this design would make a beautiful set for Radha Gopinath. That's different than the runnings of the mind. We have to learn to discriminate between the two. So when that inspiration comes, what Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur would do, he'd always keep a little notebook in his kurta pocket and a pen. And when he was chanting, when the Lord spoke to him, he'd write it down. But as soon as he wrote it down, back in the pocket, back to hearing. Maybe he's got more news for me. If I'm going to listen to my mind, I'm going to miss out. Because you may have something interesting to say to me. So like this. So we don't want to misuse the mantra. Use it to plan our day. Sitting there very attentively in the temple, because we're so, look like we're so concentrated. But what are we concentrated on? We're not concentrated on the holy name. We're thinking about our shopping list, what we have to do for our kids. We have to think who we have to meet for our business today. All these things are there. We have to shut this down. This is not what chanting is about. Another very important thing, actually this is an incredible thing, and I'm sharing it with you. If we fall into this bad habit, something disastrous may happen. We may end up in a Vrindavan where we don't want to be. There are more than one Vrindavan in the spiritual sky. Now, if you're thinking, I have to make adjustments to chant the holy name, then what's going to happen is that you're going to end up with a Vrindavan where all adjustments are made. This is not the Vrindavan of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. This is the Vrindavan of the Vallabhas, of the Vallabha line. So this Ananda is called Ananda Vrindavan. This Vrindavan is on the banks of the Viraj River, just across from material energy, just inside the borders of the spiritual world. There Krishna wears shoes. We have to make the adjustment. We don't want his feet hurt. There Radha and Krishna are always together because we don't want to see Radha unhappy. We make the adjustment. All these adjustments are there. Mahaprabhu's mood is Vipralamba. His Vrindavan is grudge. There is not only sambhog or union of Radha Krishna, but there is also separation. If we want to attain Mahaprabhu's Vrindavan, then we have to learn to depend on the spiritual energy, to call out to those who are already situated there. And in the mood of a child calling for its mother. It's actually this mood of separation, this mood of dependence, that will take us back home, back to Vrindavan. We notice in the Sad Goswami Astakam, the whole culture of how to be a true follower of Mahaprabhu is given in that Astakam by Srinivasacharya. It does not end on a note of some bog, of union. O Radha, O Krishna, where are you? It's a mood of separation, of longing. So if right now, at this stage, we're at the stage of Bhajana Kriya, at this stage, if we are falling asleep, oh, Krishna, look at me, I'm such a mess. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, you're the Lord of the impossible. Please help me. I want to chant attentively. I can't do it by my own. I'm depending on you. This is the mood. As a mother, you may only get 2 hours sleep. In your workplace, you may be kept there till 3 in the morning. I know it happens. You may not get much sleep that night. But I can guarantee you, because I've had personal experience, if you take proper shelter, the first few rounds will be a little bit shaky, because after all, we're tathasta. But if you're taking proper shelter, once you get to that third or fourth round, you feel like you've had 8 hours sleep. You've got the whole team behind you. We're family members. We're in Prabhupada's family. We can take shelter of him. We have a whole line of people wanting to help us. We have to take their help. Is that okay? Next one. Oh, this is also one that's very interesting. Familiarity breeds contempt. We could go on about this for a long time, but I'll just give a couple of examples. We come to the temple. We've been coming to the temple for a long time. First time we come in for the day, we pay our obeisances to Prabhupada. That's what everybody does, so I do it. But we come in now a few times. Do we pay our obeisances when we come back the second time, the third time? Not always. Now, what are we doing here? Same with Tulsi Devi, maybe even with the Deities. What are we doing here? We're saying, Prabhupada, you're just part of the furniture. You're just part of the furniture. That means you're just part of the scene. You don't have any special significance. This is what we're actually saying. And the unfortunate thing is that if someone doesn't have any significance for us, do we turn to them in a time of need? No. If we have fallen into the habit of treating Tulsi Devi cheaply, we see her just as a plant, we forget that she's a Sudanambhata that can give us Krishna Prem. If we're seeing her as just a plant, do we pray to our plants at home when we're in a crisis? We don't do that. So what we're effectively doing is we're cutting off the mercy. Your Guru Maharaj has made an incredible arrangement in your temple room. How many of us are aware of it? He's given us full protection and shelter just within that temple room. Everyone who is worth taking shelter of is in that temple room. Prabhupada is there. The cyclic succession after Jagannath Das Babaji is there. Six Goswamis are there. Panchatattva are there. The eight main associates of Baladeva are there. Baladeva and Krishna and Forest are there. The eight main associates of Radha Krishna are there. Everything is there. Are we conscious of it? Are we taking shelter of it? We have to remember that Diksha is bound by time and space, but Siksha is not. Siksha is always available. What stops us having access to it is our level of consciousness. We notice in our disciplic succession that there is quite big gaps, for example, between Narottam Das Thakur, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. It's a siksha line. They didn't meet. One was the inspiration of the other. So strong an inspiration that it carried on the disciplic succession. So we can understand this, that we have to be aware of what we're dealing with. Prabhupada has given things to us so easily, but that shouldn't mean that we take things cheaply. Because if we do, we're the loser. We're the loser. Is that okay? Just things to think about. I'm just giving you things to think about this evening. Okay, so we've had a little bit of a look at the science behind why we should become a conscious cooperator. What we're going to do now is to look at the art of becoming such a person. Now, when we look at this, there are two things to remember. One we've already said. We act in such a way, thinking that everything depends on me. And we are praying in a way, depending on Krishna fully. Another thing is that we are not so interested in controlling and adjusting the material energy in our bhajan. Material world, we have to do it. If we're a businessman or mother, we have to adjust the material energy. Even to make a sabji, you have to cut the potatoes. You have to wash the potatoes, isn't it? So we have to be constantly adjusting in our field of service. But in our nam-bhajan, we don't do like that. We surrender to the internal energy and those who are already situated there. We take shelter. So this is like the essential point. Now, as we mentioned earlier, at our stage, if we're wanting to go from bhajana kriya to nishtha, then what we have to imbibe in our heart and in our life are Mahaprabhu's teachings and Shikshastika 3. We all know this. This is a favorite verse of our Gurudev, isn't it? Always he's chanting this. You ever thought why? Why is he doing that? What is the importance of it? Or do we just, oh yes, Janata Pisa, just repeat. We have to understand why we're doing things. So what I'd like to do now is to look at the mindset, the attitude, and the thinking patterns of a person who has attained Nista. Because we have a goal. So we want to take on the qualities of the person who's achieved that goal, isn't it? We want to start transforming our hearts, transforming the way we think about things and do things. We have to make adjustments. So what we'd like to do now is hand out a sheet that has the third verse of Shikshastika on it, but at the same time, a very beautiful elaboration of what it actually means by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. It's very illuminating. It gives us a lot of strength just to understand what Mahaprabhu is actually saying here. So if maybe we could have two people for the men and two people for the ladies, and you can give out different things. Thank you very much. And another lady to give these. Thanks very much. You should have two sheets. One is the prayer of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and the other is the elaboration by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. You need some more, or you have enough? Okay. Let's just chant this verse together. Chanadapi sunichana taroya vasa hishnana amanina maninina kitaniya sada hari. One who thinks himself lower than the grass, who is more tolerant than a tree, and who does not expect personal honor, but is always prepared to give all respect to others, can very easily always chant the holy name of the Lord. Then Prabhupada gives us some advice here. One who follows this direction, being freed from the 10 kinds of offenses, becomes successful in Krishna consciousness and ultimately reaches the platform of loving service to the personality of Godhead. So let's see what Bhaktivinoda Thakur has to say. Mataji, would you like to give this mic to Nagarjuna? Thanks a lot. While the mic is going back, I'd just like to share something with you in relation to us identifying as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's servant. There are different tricks that Maya has, even in relation to this. Of course, we have enthusiasm. I want to serve my Guru Maharaj really wonderfully. We may get caught up in the idea that we're the best servant. Has that ever happened to us? What does Maya do? What? If we're fortunate, we get a whack. Otherwise, we just go on enjoying the profit adoration of the distinction. But if we have the good fortune to have a hit over the head, then we think, oh, that wasn't such a good designation. I got into trouble with that one. I'm a fallen servant. That's a safe position. But this also has its limitations. Because if we think we're a fallen servant, then maybe we'll start doing things like breaking the four regulative principles, because that's what fallen servants do. Maybe we'll stop chanting our rounds. Maybe we'll stop being strict about taking only prasad. Because after all, I'm a fallen servant. Oh, Maya is so tricky. So how do we look at this idea of being the servant? How do we think of it in our heart and our mind? I am a fallen servant, but I'm wanting reinstatement in my position. If I'm a servant in the house, I may be putting on a very good front. I want a raise. I want facility. I want time off. So many reasons. I may steal something and get caught. I may be sent out of the house. No more work for you here. I trusted you. I gave you the keys. You stole from me. But a fallen servant will think, I'm not so worried. I'll just get a job somewhere else and steal from them. But if someone has made a mistake, realizes they've made a mistake, realizes that person was taking such good care of me. Even when I was really sick last year, that person took such good care of me. Then we would start thinking, I want to work in that house. That person is such a good person. I was a fool. I want to work in that house. So when we go back to that house and we're accepted back, what will be our mood? Won't we do things better than we've ever done them before? Will we ever steal again? No. So if we have this mood of being a servant, because that's our position, Krishna trusted us, we misused his trust. For a long time we were just a fallen servant doing so many crazy things. How many births have we done crazy things? But now we're starting to wake up to the fact that he's such a good person. He's the best master. I want to serve him again. So if we have this mentality, I'm a fallen servant, but I want reinstatement, then we'll do everything first class and we won't have the mud of I am the best servant on our head. Just a thought that I thought to share before we move on. Mataji, would you like to read this elaboration by Bhaktivinoda Thakur? While she's doing this, I'd like you to have a think as we read what for you is the most significant point in this elaboration. What really strikes you as being important?
One, if your mind is always absorbed in chanting the glories of Lord Krishna with great care, then by that process of Sri Krishna Kirtan, you will attain transcendental qualification. Two, you should give up all false pride and always consider yourself to be worthless, destitute, lower, and more humble than a blade of grass. Three, you should practice forgiveness like that of a tree and giving up violence towards other living beings. You should protect and maintain them. Four, in the course of passing your life, you should never give anxiety to others, but rather do good to them while forgetting about your own happiness. Five, when one has to become a great soul, possessing all good qualities, one should abandon all desire for fame and honor and make one's heart humble. Six, knowing that Lord Krishna resides within all living creatures, one should with great respect consistently show honor to all beings. Seven, by possessing these four qualities, humility, mercifulness, respect towards others, and the renunciation of desires for prestige, one becomes virtuous. In such a state, you may sing the glories of the Supreme Lord. 8. Weeping, Bhaktivinoda submits his prayers at the lotus feet of the Lord. O Lord, when will you give me the qualification for possessing attributes such as these?
Would you like to call on some devotees to share what they thought to be most important for them?
Dear Ashpur, can you tell what you thought was very significant in these points?
Can everyone hear, or do we need to move the mic? Thanks very much.
While going through this, all the most wonderful 8 points, this feeling that you should, second one, that you should give up all false pride and always consider yourself to be worthless or destitute, this is very important. Many times we think that we are controller and we can manage things, on our own capacity and own capabilities. But a destitute doesn't have any other position except to be dependent on somebody else. So this feeling of being destitute is very important. This gives us humility and desire to become dependent on the Holy Name and the Lord and the Spiritual Master.
Anyone else like to share with us?
In the course of passing your life, you should never give anxiety to others, but rather do good to them while forgetting about your own happiness.
Anyone else like to share? Someone over here.
The last verse where he is saying that weeping Bhaktivinoda Thakur suffers prayers. So the word which is important is weeping. Bhaktivinoda Thakur is teaching by example that we don't have it, so we have to weep. Mm-hmm. And the whole thing is a prayer. Mm-hmm. So we constantly offer this prayer, because what things are mentioned in the seven verses are very, very difficult to obtain. Mm-hmm. But if we also summon this prayer, there's only hope to really achieve them. Otherwise, by our endeavor, we can't feel ourselves to be destitute or humble or forgiving. But just if you're constantly offering this prayer, that's what really impressed me, because the other seven verses were depressing. But the eighth verse was very end.
Especially when we know that to take the next step, we have to develop these qualities. It's quite a challenge, isn't it? Would any of the Matajis like to say something?
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
The sixth point, knowing that Lord Krishna resides within all living creatures, one should with great respect consistently show honor to all beings. This is a very practical application which can be seen in day-to-day life. So when we always think of as the energy of the Lord or in relation to the Lord, it always makes us remember that we are in tune with the Lord.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Anybody just like to share from Lila?
The fourth one, that is, in the course of passing your life, you should never give anxiety to others, but rather do good to them while forgetting about your own happiness. Yes, so many times it happens that, I'm talking about myself, how it happened. Like, I'm very sure that what I'm doing is right, and my behavior, whatever, then I realize that somebody's hurt without my knowledge, you know. Mm-hmm. So many things we do, thinking that we are very sure, we are very right, but we land up most of the time hurting others.
Mm-hmm. So very nice point, thank you. Any other Matajis like to say anything? Nataraki Mataji, would you like to say something? Please pass the mic there. Thank you.
And the seventh one is also very nice. Humility and mercifulness, respect towards others, and renunciation of desires for prestige. Humility, not false humility, real humility of understanding one's position, fallen position now, and therefore there's no need to pretend to be something else, and that goes very much hand in hand to also giving respect to others and being merciful to people who are in a position, I mean, living entities or human beings who are in a weak situation, in a dependent situation, kind of, to be kind and merciful to them and to give respect to others. It's almost like, you know, the different the relationships that we should have, like to give respect to superiors and make friends with equals and be kind and merciful to dependents. But respect actually goes for all of them. every one of them, all the different, the superiors, the equals, and respect also towards other living entities that are lower, you know, like that.
Thank you very much. Last week, we discovered in the course of our research that all of the anattas that we're dealing with can be most blissfully dealt with by Nam Sankirtan. And we came to the conclusion that therefore we have to be very, very careful of Nam Aparads. If just by Nam Sankirtan we can overcome so much difficulty within the heart, then we have to be very careful not to offend Nam. So what I would like to do now is to somehow or other get into the head of a person who has attained Nista, who has perfected this third mantra of Shishastika 3, and see how he avoids, or she, avoids these offenses. They're 11 in number, actually, but we'll look at the 10 that we chant every day. Again, some people are going to get some exercise. Sorry for that. Thank you very much. For this, we need three speakers who are feeling very comfortable to speak, who are clear in their speech. We'll need one speaker to read the offense, one for the defense, and one for the prayer. You find that I've also left a little area here entitled Your Prayer. We're not going to deal with this evening. It's just to make you aware that each of us have our challenges. We may have a particular difficulty with one offense, another devotee doesn't have any difficulty with that offense. So in these areas, we may want to offer a specific prayer of our own. Thank you very much. Do we have, I think perhaps we'll have three of our men read. You three sitting, Krishna and Nam Prabhu, do you feel comfortable to read? Okay. Prabhu, you stand. Giriraj Prabhu, is it? You stand. And Mangabihari Prabhu, would you like to read? Okay. So you decide amongst yourselves who will read the offense, who will read the defense, and who will read the prayer. And then we'll read through the sheet as a meditation. Okay, this is the offense. How does someone who's perfected Shikshastika 3, how does he defend himself against this? And what prayer can we pray to overcome this offense? So let's keep it flowing between the three of us as a meditation.
First offense, to blaspheme the devotees who have dedicated their lives for propagating the holy name of the Lord.
Defense. A devotee who is sincerely trying to apply Shikshastika 3 in his life considers himself insignificant, fallen, and in need of mercy. Therefore, he will not be concerned with the faults of other devotees, nor blaspheme or envy them.
When will Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu show his causeless mercy to me by allowing me to attend the set of lotus feet of all the Vaishnavas? When will I be able to give up this false ego so deeply engrossed in sense gratification and be able to properly honor them? Bhakti Vinod prays unto the lotus feet of the Vaishnavas, O dear devotees, please be merciful and take this worthless person into your association.
It's a beautiful prayer. Second defense?
To consider the names of the demigods like Lord Shiva or Lord Brahma to be equal to or independent of the name of Lord Vishnu.
Defense. He never mistakes the position of the demigods because he knows that all living entities, including the demigods, are insignificant parts and parcels of his beloved Krishna. They are his eternal servants and can grant no blessing without his sanction.
Oh, my dear mind, maintaining polite respect for the demigods, worship only Lord Hari. All the demigods are the dear friend of one who has actual devotion to Lord Hari.
Third offense, to disobey the order of the spiritual master or to consider him an ordinary person.
Defense. He will not act against the orders of a spiritual master because he is painfully aware that he possesses neither the transcendental power nor the intelligence to go back to Krishna, independent of Guru's mercy and shelter.
Prayer. Oh friend, make the teachings from the lotus mouth of your spiritual master one with your heart and do not desire anything else. Attachment to the lotus feet of a spiritual master is the best means of spiritual advancement. By his mercy, all desire for spiritual perfections are fulfilled.
Fourth offense, to blaspheme the Vedic literature or literature in pursuance of the Vedic version.
Defense. Being painfully aware of his lack of realized knowledge, he studies humbly, in a mood of a disciple, the holy writings of Srila Prabhupada and the Acharyas.
Prayer. Oh friend. Oh, I'm sorry. Fourth, right? Prayer. Oh Srimad Bhagavatam. Oh my only friend. Oh my dear companion. Oh my teacher. Oh my greatest wealth. Oh my believer. Oh my good fortune. Oh my bliss. I offer my heartfelt obeisances unto you. Oh my Lord. Oh most compassionate personality. Compassionate. Your two divine lotus feet are beautifully decorating the summit of all the scriptures. And when those feet in turn decorate the heads of all the spiritual masters coming in the line of disciplic succession, then their beauty and splendor increases 100-fold. Seeing this fruit, my heart has become fully satisfied.
Fifth offense, to consider the glories of chanting Hare Krishna to be imagination.
Defense. As a result of his offenseless mentality, he has actually experienced something of the potency of the holy name. Therefore, he never considers his glories to be imaginary.
Prayer. All glories to the holy name, the storehouse of the divine, who is none other than Supreme Truth, Sri Krishna, to show mercy on his devotee. He has descended in the form of sound, bestowing compassion on all. O Eternal Hari, O Eternal Harinam, you possess all powers and bestow auspiciousness upon the jivas, coming only for our deliverance. You are the sole friend who can rescue us from the ocean of birth and death. All glories to you.
Sixth offense, to give some mundane interpretation on the holy name of the Lord.
Defense. Fixed in being a humble servant of the holy name, he has some realization of Nama Tattva and therefore never makes a mistake of whimsically interpreting the holy name.
Prayer. O holy name of Krishna, you are transcendently blissful. You bestow all the spiritual benedictions for you are Krishna himself, the reservoir of all pleasure. O holy name, you are complete and the form of all transcendental mellows. You are not a material name under any condition and you are no less powerful than Krishna himself. All glories to you.
Seventh offense, to commit sinful activities on the strength of the holy name.
Defense. Identifying with the mood of Shikshashtak 3, he does not so strongly identify with the body, nor with the desire to be materially happy or enjoy the world. Hence, his tendency towards sinful activity is minimal, as is his interest in abusing the holy name.
Prayer. O my Lord Hari, I am guilty of committing thousands upon thousands of sins. And so I have fallen into the valley of his terribly deep, dark, and fearsome ocean of material existence. There is absolutely no shelter for me in this hellish place. And so I take shelter of your lotus feet. Please be kind to me and claim me as your own.
Eighth offense, to consider the chanting of Hare Krishna as one of the auspicious ritualistic activities offered in the Vedas as fruitive activities or karma kanda.
Defense. He chants absorbed in the meaning of the Maha Mantra, O Radha, O Krishna, please engage me in your loving service. And so there is no possibility of his committing this aparadha.
Prayer. Oh my dear mind, what can I say to you now? With high hopes of future happiness, I fell into the trap of fruitive actions and reactions. And now I am entangled in Maya's spider-like web. I am being destroyed by my own nonsense. How much trouble I have suffered because I failed to seriously worship the beautiful lotus feet of Lord Hari.
Ninth offense, to instruct a faithless person about the glories of the holy name.
Defense. He realizes that the holy name is the most precious gift he can give anyone because the holy name is Krishna. He therefore takes the responsibility of introducing Nama to his rebellious servants very seriously and does so very carefully and sensitively. To instill faith in the faithless, he always encourages Nam Sankirtan.
Prayer. Please tell me, when will they be mine? When will my offenses come to an end and a test for the pure holy name be infused within my heart by the power of divine grace? When will Lord Nityananda be merciful to me and free me from the illusion of worldliness? When will he give me the thread of his lotus feet and bestow upon me the qualification to enter the market? Marketplace of the holy name.
Tenth offense, to not have complete faith in the chanting of the holy name and to maintain material attachments even after understanding so many instructions on this matter.
Defense. He is always endeavoring to improve his chanting of the holy name, to weed out anarthas and avoid nama prad. And so the holy name is pleased to bless him with strong faith and a natural detachment from I, me and mine and matter.
Prayer. O merciful Lord, all that I am and have I now offered at your lotus feet, I no longer consider even myself to be mine, for now I have become exclusively yours. The false conception of thinking in terms of I and mine has finally left me. May it never again find a place to settle within my heart.
So we're starting to get some idea of the mentality that we need to develop. And we can see there's a very good reason for doing that. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself tells us, if one chants the holy name in this manner, he will certainly awaken his dormant love for Krishna's lotus feet. Bhakti Vinod Thakur tells us, chanting the holy name adorned with these four blessed qualities is the highest success of human life. This is the message of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur is telling us, this sloka was spoken for the sole purpose of focusing on how to avoid nama parad and nama bas in chanting. So we have quite a bit of work ahead of us, but we have plenty of time. What I'd like to do now is to see how such a person, to see how such a person would chant his rounds or her rounds. What is the actual culture of their dealings with the holy name? We've got some idea now of how they think, what their attitude is. Now we want to know how they chant the holy name. We'll hand out two sheets, so we need two people from each side. Thanks very much. Thank you. Sorry. Yes, sure. No problem. Thank you for coming. Okay, here we have a suggestion for how we begin our japa, how we handle the japa period, and how we conclude the japa. How many of us, when it's time to chant our rounds, grab the bead bag? Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Just take the beads, chant. When we think about it, it's quite impersonal, it's quite mechanical, and it's quite harsh. If we treated any other friend in that way, how long would he remain our friend? Of course, Nam is very merciful, but we can't abuse his mercy. So let's have a look at another way of chanting our rounds, which is more in the mood of Shikshastika 3. Before beginning our japa, remember your Gurudev, Srila Prabhupada, the disciplic succession. Actually, what I want to suggest in this is that we remember Gurudev, Prabhupada, the six Goswamis, and Panchatapa, headed by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Just to make it clear what I mean by disciplic succession. And we offer prayers to them. Now, we have a little box at the end here which tells us the benefit of doing this. Simply by remembering the spiritual master, the devotees of the Lord, and the personality of Godhead, when he invokes their benedictions, destroys all difficulties, and very easily fulfills his own desires. One receives 100th portion of the religious merit, punyapala, of an elevated person simply by thinking of him. Isn't it incredible how much resource we have that we don't use? How many days we struggle through our rounds forgetting the benefits that are there waiting for us? Just by remembering our Gurudev, by remembering Prabhupada, by remembering the six Goswamis, Panchatapa headed by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, already half the battle is won, isn't it? Very, very powerful. Now, I have given some prayers here. Maybe we can have a look at those later and see if any of them appeal to us. But what I would like to do is to turn over to the during japa time. Often the mind will try to distract us during our chanting. So prayers like the following can help us greatly during such frustrating times. Now, my advice to you at this stage of your chanting is that in the beginning and during your chanting, you're taking shelter of your Gurudev, Prabhupada, the six Goswamis, Panchatapa headed by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That should, I would suggest, be your usual course of action. But there are times when our mind is as stubborn as a buffalo. So difficult to do anything with it. And as Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati said, you cannot move a buffalo with a peacock feather. So we need a few prayers that are a bit of a stick orientated. So I've given two of them at the top here. O fool, O rascal mind, the body is under constant attack from innumerable attachments and diseases, and death is certain. What remedial measures have you taken? Just drink the medicine of Krishna's name, which is a cure for all diseases. Oh, mind, why are you giving up the nectar of Krishna's name to talk of such things as family problems, security and all? What can I say to you? Just chant the holy name. And then at the end, if we're taking shelter, what we're actually doing here is not just rattling off some mantras. What we're doing is we're praying to people to help us. We're not just chanting the Rupa Goswami mantra. We're actually praying to a person. We're praying to Rupa Goswami, I need your shelter. Please help me. So obviously, when we've taken help from somebody, the courteous thing to do is to thank them. We're successful by their mercy, so we thank them. So we don't just finish on with life. Not like that. What we do is we actually thank them. And we also say, I know my rounds were inattentive. I know offense is still there, but it's the best that I can do now. Please accept it. Just as a father would accept a half-eaten sweet from a child, you please accept this offering. And please help me to do better tomorrow. Like that. Then we pay our obeisances to the Holy Name. We pay our obeisances to those that have helped us. And I can guarantee our day will be better than it has been before. Because we're starting to get an idea of what chanting really means. It means calling out, taking shelter. Please engage me in your service. What I would like to do now is to take 15 minutes to try this. We have a sheet here, Sisko Swami's prayer, and also Rupa Goswami, but we belong to his family, we're Rupanugas. So we learn from the Sisko Swami's prayer from Narottam Goswami's Nam Sankirtan that if we offer our obeisances to the feet of these six Goswamis, by offering them our obeisances, all obstacles to devotion are destroyed and all spiritual desires are fulfilled. Isn't that an amazing benediction? Just by offering our obeisances to them, by praying to them in surrender. So what we're going to do now, 5 minutes, I want you to spend on your prayer before chanting. 5 minutes on the chanting itself. When the mind, don't worry about your deep beads, just concentrate on the chanting. If the mind goes astray, use one of these people's help to bring it back. And then leave 5 minutes, that will be between 7:15 and 7:20, the last 5 minutes to offer your prayer. I just want you to get an experience of this. Okay, so let's start right now. First we pray for shelter, for help. Now grow into thank you mode. Deal with the last section of the sheet. End with prayer. Did it feel different than your usual way of chanting? It's worth a try. So what we've done this evening is give you some insight into the science and the art of becoming a conscious cooperator with the Holy Name, becoming his true friend. And I wish you all the best in your practices. I'd like to have a brief kirtan and at the same time give out a few gifts. We have some questions? Yes? Do we have time? I don't want to... I know that you people are very busy people. How much time? What is our time frame? Let's have a time frame. No, I don't have any limit. As you people who are very busy. Anyone who has to attend to anything urgently, if we go, give me a time frame. What do you think, Krishna Nam Prabhu? Okay. Well, maybe what we'll do is we'll have a short kirtan first, distribution of the gifts, and then those who want to stay can stay. I think that would be fairer because we have mothers who have children to put to rest and so many things. So if what we'll do is we'll have one bag start this side and go that side and one bag start this side and go that side. So what we'll do today is give you the shelter of Jamuna Devi from Vrindavan. Please take a bottle each. And this is a real lucky dip tonight. Very, very beautiful prayers. So take one pink slip. Thank you very much. As well as one packet of prasad. There are different kinds of prasad. So pray for your prayer and pray for your prasad. See whose personality has come to help you at this time. So they can start with an insight. Would you like to lead the, make your choice, Prabhu? And then lead the kirtan. Thanks very much. Don't worry about them. It's not a big thing. Okay, who would like to lead the kirtan? Prabhu, would you like to lead the kirtan again? Would you like to lead the kirtan? Where is the mic, please? Okay, great. Thanks a lot. Please don't choose for them. They should choose themselves. Thanks. If you have any questions, we'll do our best to answer them. Yes. Please use the mic.
Mataji, we have seen over the period of years that we have been practicing Krishna consciousness that anything that is new is very attractive to do in the beginning. And as the time passes, things become very monotonous and becomes very ordinary. The time we started chanting Hare Krishna Maha Mantra the first month was very interesting. Similarly, the wonderful technique, I was a technique, but the wonderful process that you have taught us is very wonderful of offering prayers before, during and after chanting. But the fear that I have is that, again, if this also becomes a monotonous thing, you know, just offering prayer monotonously or the process, how do we really, really take care of this?
We're doing more than offering prayers. We're taking shelter of different personalities. We're taking shelter of our Gurudev. We're taking shelter of Prabhupada. We're taking shelter of the Six Goswamis. We're taking shelter of the Panchatattva. We're taking shelter of people. If we are honestly and seriously taking shelter of people, don't they respond? It's not a one-way street. It's a two-way street. You're not dealing with a process. You're dealing with people. And if you do it sincerely, the relationship with those people will become stronger and stronger. And that means that your relationship with the spiritual world will become stronger. And your dealings this side, you'll still have them, but you become more expert because you have a better vision now. Bhada Gopinath Prabhu, when we were doing the seminar with the brahmacharis, he said something very, very beautiful. Recently he traveled some short distance by air. And he said that good rounds are just like taking a short trip in the air. You go up. When you're down here, everything looks so troublesome, so difficult, can't handle this. But by the power of the Holy Name, we go up. We get a completely different perspective. Everything's actually insignificant. Huh? And when we land again, we come back into the same field, but we have a completely different perspective of what we're dealing with. So it's not to say that things will become problematic in our day-to-day dealings. They become more effective by taking shelter. We want the two tracks to run smoothly together. We have a conditioned nature. We have a spiritual nature. Somehow or other, we don't take this side too seriously. We have to start taking it seriously if we want to make advancement. So I'm not saying adjust what you're doing in your day-to-day life, your business, whatever like that. The mindset for that is appropriate. But now you have to start strengthening yourself as a spiritual personality. And we do that by taking shelter of those who are properly situated. Our Gurudev Prabhupada. As explained in the 10th canto, the material world is like a huge ocean. But simply by taking shelter of the lotus feet and his devotees, that huge ocean can contract into the size of the hoofprint of a calf. This is what we're going to start trying to do, consciously. Taking shelter of those already properly situated. And in this way, no more big ocean to swim across. Just have to jump across this little hoofprint of a calf. You try. Don't think I'm going to start saying prayers, because that will become mechanical. Think I'm going to start taking shelter more seriously of my Gurudev, of Prabhupada, of those who can help me. And when you take shelter of someone, especially if they're a family member, aren't they going to reciprocate? We're in Prabhupada's family. We're in Rupa Goswami's family. We're in Mahaprabhu's family. We're family members. They're going to help. So see it more in terms of taking shelter of the different personalities that I've suggested. They're very powerful and very, very merciful. You can't get a better combination. Someone may have a desire to be merciful, but they don't have the means. Someone can have the means, but not be disposed. When you get the two together, it's very, very, very powerful. So all of these people that we're recommending, they have both potency and mercy to give. Is that okay? Okay, please.
Mataji, for a grahastha, there is always a question of prioritizing his limited time that he has. And we all like to follow the full morning program, starting 5 o'clock and ending with the Bhagavatam class. But all days, we may not be able to do it because there are some other things lined up. So in such a situation, like for example, we would like to chant our rounds, but at that time also hear Bhagavatam class. Or we would like to attend the Mangalarti program, but then I have to chant my rounds because I would like to finish my rounds by 7:30 in the morning. So then, out of all these various activities that Srila Prabhupada has given us from 5 o'clock till 9 o'clock, which would you think to be the most important? I mean, do we give priority to chanting our rounds, to attending the morning program? I mean, if we have to prioritize, I mean, if we are in a situation where before 7:30 or 8 o'clock we want to finish our rounds, then do we give priority to chanting our rounds, to attending, let's say, the Mangalarti, the 45 minutes of the Mangalarti program, or skip Bhagavatam and then chant our rounds at that time? So, you know, this is always a dilemma for us as to what we should do.
If we understand the essence of the program that Prabhupada has given us, it's all about taking shelter. If we remember what we said when we were discussing the science of becoming a conscious cooperator, that we are to cluster energy. We are marginal. Everything is always disturbed. So daily, consciously, we have to choose to associate with the spiritual to get our strength. And Prabhupada has given us a program to do that. Now, all of it, whether it be the chanting, the Tulsi Puja, all of it's taking shelter of personalities, taking shelter of the spiritual energy. Why? So that we identify with that during the course of our day. We don't become bewildered and start to find our shores on the beach, you know, find our security on the beach. So when we understand that that's the purpose of the program, then we have to look at the other question, and that is, we've taken a vow to chant 16 rounds. This is the vow we've taken. If we do have to prioritize, we can't do everything, then the rounds have to somehow or other be done in a proper mood. Sometimes we have this difficulty because our understanding of the circumstance may be a little passionate, may be a little ignorant. So perhaps we would want to be praying to the people we're taking shelter of. I'm not understanding how I can do all of this. I'm not understanding how I can prioritize properly. Please give me some indication how I should do that. Because it may be a concrete reality. Everything can't be done in that time. But on the other side, it may be that you're not quite, you haven't quite worked it out yet, how you can manage. So it's a matter of understanding that the full morning program is for us to take shelter, become strong to face the day's challenges. And then we have a commitment to chant 16 rounds. We've taken it as a vow, not only before Guru, before the fire, before the eight directions, ten directions, before the Guru, its deities. It's a big commitment we've made. So that is our priority, especially given that Nam is a Yuga Dhamma. We can't afford to offend him. We've promised him we're going to make this commitment. So we do like that. But then we see, where am I drawing my strength? Will I miss Mangalati or will I miss Bhagavatam? That will have to be a personal choice. You may want to rearrange your schedule so that you can hear, if you live close enough, you can hear Bhagavatam on the radio. So maybe you adjust your breakfast time so that you can hear Bhagavatam while you're taking breakfast. Not the best thing, but still at least you're hearing Bhagavatam. And you know, if you really think about it, you can work out a program that catches as much as possible. I know grihastha life is tough because there's so many other responsibilities. But also I know that the Grihasthas tend to be sharper in their intelligence. They're out working in the business field, working, you know, they're dealing with the material energy all the time. So they're sharp. So apply that sharpness to your spiritual life.
The dilemma is more pronounced because the other aspects of the program, the timings are fixed. Like we don't have Bhagavatam class going on throughout the day. Mm-hmm. We have it only at 8 o'clock in the morning. Or we have the morning program, Mangal Aarti, is only from 5 to 5:45. Whereas Japa, I could do it the whole day, theoretically.
Mm-hmm.
So so the doubt that came to my mind was that the best time to do Japa is, of course, in the morning. But if we are required to do a qualitative 16 rounds, then it is at the cost of maybe some aspects of the morning program.
Mm-hmm.
So
if you have time in the day where you can set aside regularly the same time, then you can do that. That's not a problem. It is far more powerful to chant your rounds in the morning. But if you have an attachment for the full morning program and you have time in the day, then you can make that your time. But then create a situation for yourself. You know, make sure you're fresh, you're clean, do ashram before you start, follow the process that we've given, be in a peaceful environment, not where the kids are screaming everywhere, disturbance. You know, if you can set that kind of environment, no problem. That would be a way that you could deal with that. Is that okay? Any other questions? You've had a turn, let's see if there's anybody else. Anyone who has a question? But the very important thing that I'd like to share with you, I've experienced this in my life a lot, and that is that if we become concerned with time, life is always hassled, isn't it? Trying to work according to the time frame. It's always a hassle. And time is the impersonal aspect of Krishna. But myself, I find, because usually my life is very, very tight time-wise, but I find that if I concentrate on Krishna, He's the Lord of time, somehow or other things work out. That big, big, long list somehow or other gets done. Whereas if I concentrate on time, I just get completely hassled. There's no taste in it. What I personally do these days, I write my program for the next day before I take rest, and I present it to my deities. This is what I have to do tomorrow. I don't know how I'm going to do it. I'm depending on you. I show it to them. Like that. So it's a matter, we have a tendency to isolate ourselves, you know, and think I have to do everything myself. But there are so many resources. We have to call on so many people willing to help us. So you don't think if you show your list to your Gonithaya, your Radha Gokulananda, they're not going to help you out? You're the servant. Master is always going to help out a good servant. So, you know, there are different ways you can look at it. But I suggest that you, you know, the night before, even the materialists say this, better to plan your day the night before. But you do a little bit differently. You offer it to the Lord. It's in His hands. Amazing things can happen when you do that. Give it a try. Yes.
But this is question, like Radharani Mataji, she's not here. You were saying about the material adjustment, you know, when we are chanting.
I can't hear you.
Material adjustment, what we mean.
Mm-hmm.
So she had a question like, you know, sometimes we have poor health, you know, back problem. And so she was saying that, you know, so we always while chanting, you know, when we want to chant, we make more adjustment where our health is concerned. So then.
Yeah, that's a very good point that we need to clarify. I'm not suggesting that you don't make the necessary adjustments. For example, I can't sit on the floor for 2 hours at a stretch, so I make the adjustment of using a chair. I can't handle a high fan overhead, it gives me headache, also gives me laryngitis. So I make these adjustments, but I make them before I start my japa. I'm not saying don't make them. I'm saying whatever you need to be able to sit in one place and chant with concentration, you make those adjustments beforehand. And then that period that you sit to chant with the Lord, you depend on Him. If you fall asleep, you call out to Him. You don't use your own resources to deal with it. It has an incredible effect on the consciousness. You realize who your real strength is. At first, it's very, very difficult. You find it a struggle because we're so used to depending on our own resources. We do everything like that, don't we? It takes a while to shift gear. But just realizing that the best way to do things is to cooperate with the Lord. Is that okay? So we're not suggesting that you stop taking your medicine or you like all these kind of things. We're not meaning that. In our day-to-day affairs, we will make constant adjustments. It's a natural part of living in a materialistic society, isn't it? So that's not the problem. What we're talking about is a time when we sit to chant. That should be a time of dependence, of developing our spiritual strength. And what is that spiritual strength? To the extent that we can depend on the Lord, to that extent we are strong.
The question is like, you know, because as we become, you know, senior in age and year wise, so so many services expected from you. Like you're also a counselor, then you know, so many other services, like you have to, you know, we have to attend so many TT welcoming, so many other programs and everything. So sometimes you're not able to because, you know, your sadhana gets affected. Okay, so then you decide that you want to be very vigilant and try to not to commit to some program and, you know, give importance. Then my question is that how do I judge that whether I'm actually losing interest in my Krishna culture or I'm honestly making an attempt to, you know, improve on my chanting?
We need to be very vigilant in our decision making about how we spend our time. And one way that we can do that effectively is decide, am I essential here? Am I going to make a Krishna conscious input by being here? Is there another circumstance where I'll have more impact? For example, my trip this time, I was invited by Shyamananda Prabhu to deal with the chanting of the holy name. This was a service that I was given in coming here. But when I came here, I was asked so many days, give Bhagavatam class, I was asked so many days, come to this program, asked by so many wonderful devotees, come for breakfast, lunch, dinner. So what I did is I said no to all those things. I said no to giving Bhagavatam class. I said no to going to all the programs. I said no to all of the devotees who invited me for lunch, dinner, and breakfast. Because if I accepted at one house, the other devotees would be hurt. And why did I do that? Because I wanted to focus on the purpose for which Prabhupada sent me here. So we have to use our intelligence. What am I best at? How can I best help the devotees? What is my primary service to my Guru Maharaj? We have to start asking ourselves questions and making decisions. Because quite often we can find ourselves in a circumstance where we're just, you know, not really offering any real support to that situation. Isn't it? So we have to discriminate as a servant of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his servants. We have different strengths, different weaknesses. So see how we can deal with them. Also, we can look at the kind of, you know, we can look at our diet at night also. That has such a big impact on our health, on how early we can rise in the morning. One evening when they were serving prasad, after I had a late night program, it wasn't so late according to your standard, it was only 9 o'clock, but it was late for me. So, and I went outside and they were serving prasad. And I just had curiosity. I said, Maharaj, you already serving? She said, Lassi. Lassi's in the mode of ignorance at night. It's the mode of goodness at noon. So if you're taking something in the mode of ignorance at night, what state are you going to wake up in? Just a law, you know, natural law. So we have to, you know, we have to start using our conscious cooperator means we're making, you know, intelligent decisions about how we do our practices, how we spend our time, like that. We have to understand that the essential service for staying strong spiritually and being able to help others is to chant in proper consciousness. If we're doing so much service that we're losing sight of the vow we've taken to our Guru Maharaj, and the effect of doing so much service is that we become more and more passionate in our dealings with devotees and trying to get things done, we hurt them, they lose faith in the process, seeing what we're like, and we're supposed to be a senior. We have to take responsibility in making these decisions. So we don't just accept everything that comes into the circumstance, into the situation. This has been offered, I have to take it. We have to analyze it. Of course, if it comes from a spiritual authority, we have to respect that. But we have a mood in which we respect that. How do we respect that? According to Bhagavad Gita 4:34. If we're not sure that we can handle that extra service, then we go in a submissive mood. We say, Prabhu, I'm not really sure I can manage this and chant my 16 rounds. Can we think of another way to do it? The other thing, that as a counselor, you have counselees. Prabhupada was very, very expert at delegation. It's not that we have to individually do everything. We can also see what we delegate. May mean that some of our material chores we delegate. They take our time, but they don't really offer as much shelter spiritually. We have to really look at our life in perspective and see how we can make it more dynamic, how we can make it more conscious. You have to be conscious before you can be Krishna conscious. Because if we work ourselves so much that we can't even focus on our chanting in the morning, what is the value of that service? We have to prioritize and do it intelligently. Isn't it? It's a big question. But we have, you know, like, sometimes we're forced by circumstance. I was the kind of person, I had two strokes. I was the kind of person before I had these strokes that could never say no. I could never say no. That meant sometimes my working day, my service day was 16 hours, 18 hours. I could never say no, and the result was stroke. So I've learned to say no. But I say no with intelligence. I say no thinking, what will Prabhupada want me to do in this circumstance? Is that okay? It means we have a lot of work to do. And then we have to apply our intelligence to the circumstance. Please, if you feel dissatisfied with my answer, tell me. I don't mind that. I prefer you do that. Because then we can look at it from a different angle of vision.
Actually, there should not be any question. You have cleared it. Just in this context, just remembering that in Vrindavan, a devotee said, Prabhupada, I would like to actually chant, but I am involved in so many things.
I can't hear you, Prabhupada.
This disciple of Prabhupada, I don't remember his name, he was too much involved in constructing the temple. Prabhupada, I would like to be in Vrindavan and just chant, but now I am involved in so many things, people are cheating me, the cement and this. So what did he say, Prabhupada?
He said, for you to be dealing with all these people who are involved in the construction, that is your japa.
So in this context, I'm just remembering, is it like sometimes, I know it's true that chanting, it's just hurrying it up.
Mm-hmm.
I want to just finish my rounds.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are so many other things. Now you very clearly said that you can delegate material activities. It is not going to give spiritual. Plan it out. But again, same time, if you think like, oh, this is a service.
Mm-hmm.
See, Prabhupada said like that.
But we have to always check the circumstance in which Prabhupada says things. Our law books are his books are our main guide. What he says in lectures and things like that are circumstantial. They're to particular people. So we can understand why he would say that at that time. Isn't it? It was an emergency situation. We will deal differently in an emergency situation than we will deal in a regular situation. If we make every day an emergency, we're going to be in a really bad shape within a very short time. So there are times when that emergency is there. Janmashtami is a major one. We're expecting so many people to come. A lot of responsibilities for all the counselors, I'm sure. But that's not every day. So in our regular course of events, we look carefully at the circumstance, knowing that the rounds are a priority. If we're performing Nam Aparad, what is the value? We have to also understand that getting things done is best done in the mode of goodness. You see people running around with their arms in the air, yelling and screaming and carrying on, the ones that haven't chanted their rounds properly in the morning. You know, someone in the mode of goodness can get more done in less time and with less energy. It's a fact. So we have to look also, you know, if we are more focused, if we take the time to chant our rounds properly in the morning, then we're going to be more in control of our circumstance, of our mind, of our emotions. That means our dealings with the devotees are going to be better. Our dealings with the circumstances are going to be better. We're not going to have to waste time going and apologizing to people that we hurt because we dealt with them improperly. Do you get my point? So this is why it's so important. The Brahman, and we can all develop these brahminical qualities, they're essential. The Brahman doesn't deal with things as they come. The Sudra does that. Something comes in the way, we deal with it. Something comes in the way, we deal with it. The Brahman plans, then half those problems don't even happen. So we take our time schedule and we look at what's important. We look at what we have to do each day. Even if it means we keep a full manual of our time and we check it. We also tend to waste a lot of time. We're not well trained in time management. Another thing we're not good at is ergonomics. Ergonomics means what I've just said, that we get the maximum benefit out of the least time and energy. We get the maximum result out of least time and energy. Someone who's using, I'll give you it's a very sweet story. There was a king who had many people in his court who were doing the cleaning and this kind of thing. And he had one very expert Brahmin. That Brahmin would just sit and recite mantras and do so many things during the day. And these sudras, they have to do all this hard work, all this cleaning. I'm starting to think, this Brahman gets better pay than we do. He gets better care than us. All he does is sit around and sing mantras. We do all the hard work. So finally they got up the courage. They went to the king and said, we can't understand your logic. We're doing all the work. All he does is sing mantras. And we get less than he does. Can you please kindly explain this? So the king, he's an intelligent person. He says, my elephant is very sick. I have to give him medicine according to his weight. So you weigh the elephant and tell me his weight. I'll give you one day to figure out how to do it. They come back at the end of the day. We're not sure how to do it, oh dear king. Give us another day.
Give us another day, another day, another day. It went on for 7 days. Don't know how to work out how to weigh the elephant. He says, you just stand here for 1 minute. The king calls the Brahmin. He says, I want you to weigh the elephant. He needs medicine. How much time do I have, O dear king? If you can give it to me in an hour, I'd be happy. He said, I'll do what I can. So what does he do? The king has his boat on the ocean front. He takes the elephant onto the boat, marks on the side of the boat where the water has come, takes the elephant off because he's sick, puts him back to bed. Then he puts as much weight on the boat as it goes up to the mark. Goes back in an hour. Dear king, he weighs this much. So we should become like this. Huh? Not that we're working, 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 working and getting nothing done. Can't answer a simple question. But rather, we're focused. We're using our intelligence. We're relying on the energy of the Lord. We're relying on the servants of the Lord for support. Because as we mentioned, this is a beautiful pulpit by Prabhupada, where he says that a person in full Krishna consciousness is not unduly anxious about executing the duties of his existence. The foolish cannot understand this great freedom from all anxiety. Now, why is this person not in anxiety and getting so much done? Because he realizes he's a cooperator. I'm not the doer. The Lord is the doer. I'm his instrument. Now, if I know that Krishna, Prabhupada is cooking the sabji, and I'm just the spoon, what problem do I have? Prabhupada's an expert cook. He could cook a whole meal in how many minutes? Less than an hour, he'd cook a whole meal. All very tasty. So this is why I'm stressing that we become conscious cooperators. We start to understand that, and then we can do amazing things. We can become empowered. Once we realize that I can become an instrument in the hand of Prabhupada, sometimes he'll use me to stir the sabji, sometimes he won't. That's his prerogative. But when he does use me, what amazing things can be done. Means we have to make a few paradigm shifts. And we're so used to doing things in this way, you know. But there are other ways to do it, and we have to explore that. Gauranga Prabhu was giving a very nice example in Bhagavatam class this morning. He was saying that if we just follow tradition, there's a tendency to stagnate. But if we just follow innovation, there's a tendency to deviate. So if we stick with the tradition, but we look for new ways to do things, it's like overtaking on the highway. We can go ahead. It's not that we're going to leave the highway, but we're going ahead. So maybe it's time to go ahead. Think of different ways to do things. You have to be introspective. For all of these things that we've talked about this evening, not misidentifying, not losing sight of the goal, all of this means we have to be introspective. And Prabhupada's way of doing things was to be dynamic and introspective at the same time. It's the teachings of Bhagavad Gita. Remember me and fight. Not that I fight or I remember. We do practice them separately because we're weak. We do our business, we have our time for our chanting. But if we're doing both of them effectively, as Krishna conscious, there will come a time when we can do both together. We can remember Krishna and we can fight. So we have to realize that, okay, I'm here. I have a lot of work to do. But I have faith the process works. I'm going to give it a try. Yes? Is there anyone else that would like to ask a question that hasn't asked? Anyone have a question? Okay, please go ahead.
Just something I wanted to share. In 1989, His Holiness Radhanath Swami was answering a question-answer session where he refers to this particular situation of Surabhi Maharaj. And Radhanath Swami made a point that along with this instruction of Prabhupada, he also empowered Surabhi Maharaj. And because a pure devotee like Srila Prabhupada, when he gives a specific instruction, then it takes, along with that particular instruction, the complete, he makes the devotee surrender. So, and Radhana Swami made the point that, but for us, chanting our 16 rounds attentively is the instruction of Srila Prabhupada, so that's not applicable to us.
It's a fact.
Just something that came to my mind.
Thank you very much for sharing that.
There was a question that came, that is there in my mind, Mataji, is that when we are chanting our rounds, when we have this, as you mentioned, day-to-day issues coming in our mind, we were advised, I don't remember who, but it was just that we should have a piece of paper with us and a pen and just write it down so that that particular thing goes out of our mind.
Mm-hmm. You know,
is that one recommended way to do, so that the thing doesn't keep on praying in our mind, you know,
mm-hmm.
keep on focusing on that so that we should not forget about it.
Yeah, yeah.
So this is something
if it's coming as an inspiration, and we're hearing and it comes as an inspiration, it was the system of Bhakti Siddhanta to do that. Write it down and leave it at that. Don't let the mind play with it, just leave it like that. But usually what we find is that if there's issues that we're dealing with, they're not to do with hearing something from the holy name. They're the mind just playing on us, playing on us, playing on us. And in that case, it's better just to ignore it. Better just to ignore it. No, because we, at this time, what we're trying to do is to gain the strength to go and deal with it. So if we're letting our mind eat us away, we're not going to have any strength. That time is for gaining the strength for dealing with the day. And that comes through taking shelter of Krishna and his devotees. You don't want to waste it with the, you know, that time with the name, with the mind. Any other questions? Please.
I just remember last time when you said vikshepa. It's the most dangerous thing, you said, like, where a person is not lazy, he's, one sense, very attentive, and he's chanting, but his mind is focused on something else.
Mm-hmm.
You said it can water all material desires. And just thinking, this is maybe some technical thing. How does it happen, like, we are chanting, but mind is focused on something else, and still we are chanting? For outsiders, it appears that I'm chanting.
Mm-hmm.
How does the body, like, doesn't the mind has to also focus? If I'm chanting, if my body is moving, my lips are moving, I'm pronouncing, but my mind is completely away. How does it happen?
The mind is a monster. That's why it's so important to consciously focus in the morning before we start our japa. Say you have a very, very important meeting. Are you just going to walk into that meeting unprepared? No way. The more important the meeting, the more prepared you'll be in all respects. So in the same way, we're going to meet the holy name. We're going to prepare for it. That's why I'm giving you one suggestion here. That before you begin, you set the mind in a decent framework as a cooperator with you. You're taking shelter of those who are far more powerful than your mind. Your mind may be more powerful than you, but it's not more powerful than the six Goswamis. So at the beginning, we're taking shelter of these people. We're not going to depend on ourselves to defend ourselves against the mind. We're going to depend on people who have caliber. So we take shelter. And half the time, the mind won't even give us too much trouble. I think it's really a matter of trying this way of doing things, of taking shelter of personalities who are worth taking shelter of. Taking shelter of ourselves has proven to be not so useful. You have a question? Please.
Samadhi, I was just—is it right that keeping Krishna in the center of our life is what our goal is? So, if all of our decisions, all of our priorities, all of our work, just keep chanting of Hare Krishna Maha Mantra as a center, does it translate exactly like that? That all our activities that we are doing, that we keep the chanting as a priority. That how will this affect, how does it affect adversely or positively for chanting? Is that what
no,
we
should
do? No,
if our focus is to, if our priority is to have a decent relationship with the Holy Name, everything else will fall into place. Everything else will fall into place. Isn't it? If you have, So you're living in Bombay. You have a good relationship with the mayor. You're a businessman that needs signatures occasionally. Is it going to be difficult to get those signatures? If you have a good relationship with the mayor? No. Everyone who is, you know, going to be obstructing you are his energies, his secretaries, his peons, all these people, isn't it? So if you have a good relationship with the top man, what's the problem? So we're talking about developing a relationship with the top man. This is really something that you have to do and experience the result of. And then the conviction will become stronger and stronger just by experiencing. For example, 2 days ago, I was quite ill. I got very, very little sleep, less than 2 hours sleep. But I wanted to go, I had reasons I wanted to go to the morning program. When I started my rounds, I thought, I don't think I'm going to make it. I'm really depending on you guys, this one. And the first two rounds were extremely difficult. It was practically every mantra. It was, oh, Rupa, oh, Goswami, you know, like, please help me. Please help me with this. Look at this mess I'm dealing with. But after those two rounds, it was like I'd had 8 hours sleep. It's a matter of you trying it. I can sit here and talk all night. But it's a matter of you trying it, experiencing how, yes, they do help. Yes, I can overcome my own limitations by taking shelter of these people. It's for you to try and experience. What do you think? You're going to try it? Yes, please.
I'd like to make a confession, Madhuji. I have a habit that I just want to finish my rounds in the morning. You know? So I just do mechanically. Mm-hmm. So I just feel satisfied, oh, I have finished my rounds, because I don't know how the day will come. You know, you feel maybe some guest will drop in, or you have to go out for some shopping or some thing. And then just to convince myself, I just feel I have the whole day. Then I do, like, you know, few rounds in the day, you know, and I just feel okay now. Maybe this round was better than the morning, you know, like suppose if we do four or six extra rounds. So then I just convince myself in that sense, but I'm sure I'm wrong. So how I should change myself?
I'm not quite understanding your question. Can you tell us what the essence of it is?
Yeah, like I have a habit, you know, I just feel that I should finish my rounds early in the morning. Mm-hmm. Early in the, means in the morning. Mm-hmm. So then I feel satisfied that I finished my rounds. Otherwise the whole day you just feel that your rounds are left. And don't know how the day will come, you know.
Mm-hmm, that's
since
true.
You are busy, maybe some guest come or something or the other, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then just to convince myself, I feel I have the whole day, then I can do some extra rounds afterwards. Then I just feel maybe this round was better than the morning, or that round was better than, you know, then I feel out of these few rounds, my 16 rounds must be, you know, God will take the best 16 rounds. I know, I mean, my thinking is wrong, so I just wanted to confess, and I just wanted to know how should I change myself. Mm-hmm. I just have the feeling that I should just finish off my rounds, you know.
Mm-hmm. Our concern should be for quality. That should be our concern. And if it means that we can only get 12 done in the morning, and the rest will be done later, make sure those 4 rounds that are pending are done also in proper circumstance. Don't leave them so late that you can't concentrate on them, or the guests call in for dinner or something. If you can do them all in the morning with concentration and not just trying to speed through them mechanically, this is the worst way to kill your relationship with the Holy Name. It's suicidal. So you try what I've given you tonight. You try it. And don't be so concerned by the time frame. Use the time that you have in the morning to chant as much as you can in proper mood. And then you just ask. When you're doing your prayers at the end, you say, I still have these pending. I'm depending on you to get them done. You please help me. And you see what happens. Worst thing we can do is to deal inappropriately with the Holy Name. It's suicidal. Because what happens is, if we deal inappropriately with Him, then he turns his back, we don't get any taste, then we stop chanting. That's how it happens. So we want to keep that relationship going. It means you have to give it some attention. Any relationship that we want to work nicely, we have to give attention to it, isn't it? You try. Try it. If anybody else has suggestions, please also feel free to say something.
But as it is said that, Krishna conscious progress ultimately doesn't depend on your endeavor.
I can't hear you.
Your Krishna conscious progress doesn't depend on the individual endeavor, whatever he makes, doesn't. It depends on the mercy of the Lord or the spiritual master. So my question is that, can it be possible that sometimes some devotees, because of a special mercy of their spiritual master, can do wonderful service even if the sadhana is weak? Why this question came is that, unfortunately, whenever there is a discussion, when you really want to, I saw one God sister begging another God sister, please help me, pray for me that I can chant better. Oh, she said, oh, you don't worry, you have your Guru Maharaj's blessing. You can, you'll go back to God. What I meant is that you have weak, but then,
there are different kinds of ways we can achieve perfection. We can do it through Kripa Siddhi, which is where it's dependent on mercy, sadhana, our own endeavor, or maybe we're a nitya. We're already a nitya siddha. So it can come through those two ways. But we have to be very, very careful that we don't misinterpret circumstances. The true mercy of the Guru manifests when you're chanting your rounds very nicely and you're doing your service very nicely, where there's a proper balance and harmony between the two. We're not talking about emergency circumstance. We're talking about general circumstance. If you are able to chant good rounds every day to keep proper Vaishnava relationships with the devotees and to do quality service, obviously you have the blessings of Guru and the Parampara. We should be able to do all three. Why not? Yes, you'd like to say something? Please use the mic.
But Sadhan Siddha is concerned, it's also not by his own endeavor, it's also by the Guru, because in the first place he got the mercy of the Guru to be into that sadhana. Yes. Just dependent on the mercy of the Vaishnavas, the Guru and Krishna. And I meant to say something else. It is actually for sadhakas like ourselves, it is almost, we can always conclude that we must take shelter almost always. We should rather take the vow to chant rounds good. And actually my experience is also when just like you were saying earlier, when you chant your rounds good, then the intelligence, you have proper intelligence to discriminate, your vivek buddhi becomes properly situated, and you'll know what to do away with, which is not necessary, and do other things that are necessary, just like action in a mode of passion, action in a mode of goodness, and an action on a transcendental platform are obviously different. So I think taking shelter of the holy name will give you a better chance to discriminate properly what to do and what not to do.
Thank you very much. Also
take shelter of Krishna, who can help you to compensate for things that you're not able to do. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, he cares what we lack and preserves what we have. Like that.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing we have to be very mindful of is that we have a long journey ahead of us. We don't want to be shooting stars. Magnificent service for a few years, then no one sees us anymore. We want to be rising moons. Slow and steady, wonderful, until we go back to Prabhupada. So don't be a shooting star. Be a rising moon. And that means you have to be very steady in your sadhana. Of course, there will be challenges this time when we have to make the sacrifice. Big days, Jamashtami, so many things are there. Emergency in the temple, emergency meetings, like that. But that shouldn't be our habit. That shouldn't be our emergency shouldn't be our regularity. It's something different. So I think what we can understand from this evening is that we have to look very, very carefully at our lives and the way we're doing things, and to perhaps make some very focused and intelligent changes, adjustments, so that it's more comfortable for us to chant our rounds attentively. We can give them proper focus. Is it okay? Anything else? My pleasure. Please accept my benediction.